Hi, I want to welcome you to the Barnabas Ministry Spiritual Recovery Series, and this lesson is the spiritual life cycle. And I first became familiar with this idea from a book that my wife learned about in seminary. It's by Hagberg and Gulick, and the book is entitled The Critical Journey. And what it really does, it talks about just different stages that people go through in their spiritual lives. And this is really a critical part of understanding the whole bad spiritual experience and recovery process. So we're going to talk about this here. And let's think about stages that we go through in different areas of life. We go through stages physically. We go through stages educationally. We go through these in our careers. Just about every endeavor that we're involved in life, we go through different stages. And so it makes sense that we would go through different stages in our spiritual lives as well. And let's just take an example. Let's look at our physical lives. Eric Erickson was a psychologist, and he identified some specific stages of physical growth. He talked about infancy being from birth to 18 months, early childhood from 18 months to 3 years, play age from 3 to 5, school age from 5 to 12, adolescence from 12 to 18, young adulthood from 18 to 35, middle adulthood 35 to 65, and then late adulthood 65 until death. And it's interesting that the scriptures even tell us that Jesus was about 30 when he began his ministry. It's in Luke 3:23. And for some reason, to Luke and to his readers, what stage of life Jesus was in mattered. He wasn't some 15-year-old kid. He was about 30, which most people would consider pretty much the prime of life. And it's interesting how many stages you go through before you get to adulthood. When someone's young, you go through many stages very rapidly. Then when you get to be older, I mean, once you turn 18, you've only got a couple more stages to go through before that's it, you know? And so the stages change fairly quickly when you're younger, at least physically, in that model. Now, look at things educationally. Well, we understand the whole preschool, kindergarten idea. We have elementary schools. We have middle schools or junior highs. We have high schools. Then we have either trade schools or colleges. Now, we may even have graduate school. And again, so there's different types of schools for different stages of learning. And so spiritually, of course, it just makes sense. And yet we never really think of being in different stages spiritually. But my understanding is that the stages that we go through spiritually have an awful lot to do with our spiritual experiences and everything from how satisfying they are to how unsatisfying they are. Everything from, wow, this was really good experience, to my goodness, this was a terrible experience. And you think about it, that should just make sense. Imagine taking a high school kid and putting him in kindergarten class and subjecting him to the same rules and controls that a kindergarten class would have. It would just be not a good idea. By the same token, you wouldn't take a kindergarten kid and plop him onto a college campus and say, okay, your first class is at 9 o'clock over in Tanner Hall over there, or whatever. You know, that's just not a recipe for success. So why shouldn't our spiritual lives have stages as well? And so what I want to do today in this lesson is be able to discuss these different stages with a view to how we can benefit most from understanding them. And again, also with an idea towards how this affects the bad church experience. And, before we get into this, it should be evident that going through different stages means that people grow. And growth comes from learning and from discipline and from experiences and a lot of other factors. And it's not a put-down to be at any stage. And, of course, the junior high kids will always look at the little elementary age kids and go, oh, you guys got to go to the little baby school. And you're always going to have that kind of a mentality But the reality is, from God's point of view, or from a more mature person's point of view, there's no wrong stage to be in. All stages are necessary. It's wonderful for a baby to be a baby. It's wonderful for a baby to be 4 years old and be in that stage. It's wonderful for them to be 10 years old. All the stages are good. It's not that one's good and one's bad, okay? So get the idea that that you're growing, and if you're not in a more advanced stage, that you're bad or something like that. That's not the case. All stages are necessary, and all stages are beneficial, and they're suitable. Now, in this book, The Critical Journey, they broke out what they called six different stages. And I'll just mention them here, but I'm not really going to discuss them at length. But I want to expose you to them and say that's a very good book. I'd recommend it. And if you read through it, you'll see a very enlightening and beneficial discussion of these different stages. So the first stage they describe is called the recognition of God. The second one, the life of discipleship. The third stage, the productive life. The fourth stage, the journey inward, or the wall. The fifth stage, the journey outward. And the sixth stage, the life of love. And through their discussion and through their research, each stage has certain needs, ways of fulfilling that need, and things that point to the next stage. And so when I read that book, I thought, well, this is really good. I want to study out the New Testament to see if there's real evidence from the scriptures, from the first century church, that these stages exist. And son of a gun, when I got into studying the New Testament, I realized that there were stages in the New Testament church. And you can see these things pretty clearly, and we're going to be able to actually study some scriptures and take a look at them. But what I found was three basic stages, and these pretty much overlap with their stages. So you take two of theirs, and they would fit into one of mine in that way. But here's the stages I came up with, and these are the ones we're going to talk about. The first one is what I call the newborn Christian. The second one is what I call the mature Christian. And the third one I'll call the Christ-like Christian. So let's jump in and discuss these. The newborn Christian, and it should be evident this is someone who has just become a Christian. This is the stage that they'll be in. So the growth objective for a newborn Christian would be, number one, to learn the basics. And a great example of this would be in Acts 2:42, the very first newborn Christians. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. So there was a definite focus on learning the very basics of the faith. So focusing on the apostles' teaching, things like that, building the relationships, getting into the basic disciplines of the Christian life, so learning the basics. There's also a sense of awe in Acts 2, verse 43. Everyone was filled with awe. There is no one quite so excited as a young Christian. And, for instance, there will be times when you may hear a preacher criticize older Christians. Well, you're not as excited as that younger Christian over there. Well, of course they're not, and neither are you, by the way, Mr. Preacher Dude. We go through stages. Certain stages are characterized by certain things. And we shouldn't ever use the characteristics of one to judge the other. Never, never do that. We're going to end up being all whacked out if we do that. So anyway, the newborn Christian has this great sense of awe. Now, another growth objective for the newborn Christian is to establish discipline. And I alluded to this before about being devoted to the fellowship. Look in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 20. Paul says, "You, however, did not come to know Christ that way. Surely you heard of him and were taught in him in accordance with the truth that is in Jesus. You were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness." And so you see this transformation of putting off old ways and putting on new ways. And again, this is the basic spiritual discipline of someone who's a very young Christian. He says, you didn't come to know Christ this way. Here's how you came to know him. And he goes and describes that process, looking back for them, putting off the old and putting on the new. And you see this again in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 1. Therefore rid yourselves of all malice and deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. Like newborn babies, crave pure spiritual milk, so that by it you may grow up into your salvation, now that you have tasted that the Lord is good. So again, the newborn Christian is putting away the bad things and craving spiritual milk. Here is the metaphor that Peter uses, that nourishment that you can grow up in your salvation. Peter recognizes that you're going to be a newborn Christian and that you're going to grow up in your faith at some point in time. See, he recognizes that. Now, what are some of the pitfalls that the newborn Christian can have? You know, we talked about some of the growth objectives. One pitfall is an overvaluation of knowledge compared to love. Look in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, in verse 1. Now about food sacrificed to idols, we know that we all possess knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. The man who thinks he knows something does not yet know as he ought to know. But the man who loves God is known by God. One characteristic that young Christians are going to have, or these newborn Christians are going to have, is they're going to overvalue knowledge compared to love. And that makes complete sense because there's a very large knowledge component to the newborn Christian's way of looking at things. They're learning all kinds of new things and new facts and new disciplines and new everything. There's a lot of knowledge there, and so knowledge looks like, wow, this is great. There's all these things to know. And they can be very tempted to look at others and say, well, don't you know this and don't you know that and don't you know this and everything? And yet Paul is cautioning the Corinthians here. I know you possess knowledge, but he says, you know, knowledge puffs up. Love builds up. And he, right away, he says, knowledge is important, but love's even more important. And you don't really see too much focus on teaching younger Christians how to love. You see them getting involved in the fellowship, but love is a very mature trait that people are going to grow into. And he's even telling these Corinthians here, you got to learn how to build people up and not just be puffed up yourselves. And there's an idea here that when you're focused on knowledge, you tend to be focused on yourself. But the next thing that you've got to draw people towards is being able to care about others and building up others. Another pitfall that the newborn Christian gets or can fall into is worldliness masquerading as spirituality, especially relating to other Christians. And again, thankfully, the Corinthian letter has so many examples of this in there. And here's another one in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 1. Brothers, I could not address you as spiritual, but as worldly, mere infants in Christ. And there, again, there's the metaphor of stages. I gave you milk, not solid food, for you were not ready for it. Indeed, you are still not ready. You are still worldly. For since there is jealousy and quarreling among you, are you not worldly? Are you not acting like mere men? For when one says, I follow Paul, and another Apollos, are you not mere men? Now, these people may have been Christians for quite a while here by the time this letter was written to them. Certainly, you know, a year or two or three or whatever, there's a period of time here where these people have still been Christians. But he says, you know, you're still in that newborn Christian stage. I'm giving you milk. I've been giving you milk. You're not ready for the solid food yet because you've got this jealousy and quarreling. And so you see, that what was going on in the Corinthian churches, they tended to gravitate to this leader or to that leader, you know, to Paul or Apollos or whoever. And Paul just said, that's a newborn Christian kind of thing. That really is. That is a very, very immature thing. I'm trying to get you to be more grown up in your faith here. But again, this idea of worldliness masquerading as spirituality shows up in the newborn Christian, and it's something that it's just there, and it's something people have to grow out of. Now, what are the ministry needs that newborn Christians have? The number one thing is good relationships with more mature Christians. That's something that's just critical. Look in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, where Paul is writing to them, and he says, But we were gentle among you, like a mother caring for her children. We loved you so much that we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well, because you had become so dear to us. And you see this comparing of the relationship, like a mother, and elsewhere in that text it talks about being like a father. That there's this real need that a newborn Christian has to develop relationships with older Christians, because it's through the relationship that you learn. Just like children learn from their parents, so young Christians learn from older Christians. Now, you got to be careful with that. Doesn't mean that every older Christian is going to love you as much as your mother does or something like that. That's not necessarily true. But the point is that a ministry need that young Christians have is relationships with older Christians. And I do mean real relationships, not just, I know who that person is, I know that person's name, but really getting to know each other, because it's through the context of relationship that we can grow and benefit from one another. The other ministry need that young Christians have is instruction in the basics. And we talked about this earlier, but here's another verse, Ephesians 4, verse 11. It was he who gave some to be apostles, some to be prophets, some to be evangelists, and some to be pastors and teachers to prepare God's people for works of service, so that the body of Christ may be built up until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature. And there's another stage there, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. And notice the objective is to become mature, but how do we get there? We get there by being instructed, by being built up, and being prepared for works of service. So this instruction in the basics and putting the basics into practice help us to grow to maturity. And again, even though I'm citing only a few scriptures here, I think this is very faithful to the whole message of the New Testament. I'm sure that as you're listening to this, many of you are also thinking, wow, here's another passage that says that same basic idea. And this is exactly right. There is a very definite stage of the newborn Christian. Well, let's go on to the next stage, which the scriptures call the mature Christian. And the mature Christian is, I guess it's almost evident to say, it's the next stage after the newborn Christian. Where does a newborn Christian go? Well, they go to the mature Christian. There's no teenage Christian that I can tell. You just go straight from the newborn to the mature Christian. And isn't that nice to be able to skip over those teenage years? What are the growth objectives and characteristics of the mature Christian? And the first one is really having the maturity to meet the needs of others. In Romans 15 and verse 14, Paul says, I am convinced, my brothers, that you yourselves are full of goodness, complete in knowledge, and competent to instruct one another. Galatians 6, verse 1, brothers, if someone is caught in a sin, you who are spiritual should restore him gently, but watch yourselves, or you may also be tempted. So you see this characteristic or this idea of being able to meet the needs of other people. The newborn Christian is focused on learning and participating and experiencing things, and it's all very self-centered in a way. And it's not necessarily bad. Those are all good and necessary things. But the more mature Christian realizes that the faith is not an end unto themselves, that ultimately there's a need to meet the needs of others, and they have to have a certain level of maturity, among other things, to be able to start doing that. And so you see that the scriptures talk about this idea about maturity. And one of the things that characterizes it is being able to meet the needs of others. The next characteristic is self-discipline and godly living. Look in Philippians chapter 4. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. So again, you see this self-discipline. Think about the right things. Put things into practice, and it's very much on to them. It's their responsibility to learn the discipline, to live in a godly way. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7, have nothing to do with godless myths and old wives' tales. Rather, train yourself to be godly. For physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. Now, Timothy was a minister, and yet he's in this second stage, this mature Christian stage. And Paul's just reminding him, don't get involved in all this other bizarro kind of stuff, but train yourself to be godly. It's self-discipline that makes a person godly. It's not somebody else doing things to you that makes you a godly person. It's your self-discipline. It's your own character, your own spirituality. The last characteristic in the mature Christian that I want to bring up here is this whole idea of transformation, where you really are transformed. Read what Romans chapter 12 says, verse 1. Therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. So you see that as we offer ourselves to God, that God really considers that a spiritual act of worship. And so often in today's churches, we focus on the worship service and the singing and the songs and the lights and the atmosphere and all these things that have to do with the worship experience. Well, Paul comes along and says, you more mature Christians, offering yourself to God, that's your act of worship. That's what really matters. And not that the singing and other things don't matter, but really it comes down to transforming your life. And you get that by really submitting yourself to God. In verse 2, he says, don't conform to the pattern of the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And again, it's changing. I remember when I was in college that I struggled a little bit my first year or two in engineering school. And something finally happened in my second year in engineering school that just helped me to change and helped me to kind of get it. And I realized that instead of going to engineering school, which was what I had been doing, what I really needed to do was to become an engineer. And I had to be transformed. I had to start thinking that way and seeing myself that way. And when I started doing that, a lot of things started clicking. Up until that point, I was just taking engineering classes. And the thing that was getting in the way of me doing well in those classes was that I was just taking them as classes. I was taking it as material. I wasn't really being transformed. Once I allowed myself to start being transformed and really learning those things, then I started doing much better in school, and it's a good thing. Well, what are some of the pitfalls of the more mature Christian? And not that these are necessarily pitfalls, but the first one is that the mature Christian is going to face discouragements. And they need to learn how to persevere in the face of these things. In Hebrews chapter 12, therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. And the young Christian, thankfully, doesn't face too many discouraging things. They may face persecution. I'm not saying that they aren't going to face discouragements. But that newborn Christian phase doesn't last very long compared to the more mature Christian phase. And in that more mature Christian phase, there are going to be discouragements. There's going to be opposition. And there's this need to persevere and to realize that, okay, I'm not just trying to get through this week or this month. I'm really building a whole life of faithfulness. However many years God gives me, I'm going to live those lives faithfully. And so you look at your life as a marathon, something to persevere all the way through and not just to get through this week. And persevering is something that takes a real change in character. And so that's where these ideas of transformation and self-discipline come into play as well. But that's one of the pitfalls, is that mature Christians are going to have to learn how to persevere. And if they don't, their faith is really at risk. And so perseverance is a key component that the mature Christian is going to be needing to work on. Another one that's a pitfall for more mature Christians, and this is a big one, church involvement masquerading as spirituality. And in Revelation chapter 2, look in verse 2. This is an incredible passage. I know your deeds, your hard work and your perseverance. And this is, of course, Jesus' letter to the seven churches. I know that you cannot tolerate wicked men, and that you have tested those who claim to be apostles but are not, and have found them false. You have persevered and have endured hardships for my name, and you have not grown weary. So you see that they've done a lot of the more mature Christian things pretty well. And yet Jesus says, yet I hold this against you. You have forsaken your first love. And so they were so involved in so many church things that it through that involvement, they drifted away from the real core of their own spirituality. And it had become more about the church and about all the corporate aspects of that instead of just their very first love, which is their love of God and their love of Christ. And that's something that can happen to a more mature Christian. They can get so involved in church things that God can become very distant. And it's very deceptive. We think, oh, so-and-so is involved in church, and they're in this thing and that thing, and oh, they've been doing this for years. That doesn't mean anything about where they are spiritually, necessarily. It really doesn't. It is very, very possible to be involved in church things and to be distant from God. And all the more reason to be aware of this and to even give people a chance. Don't just throw people into programs or think, well, I'm doing all these programs, I'm close to God. Doesn't work that way. Those are completely separate things, and it's something that you've got to watch out for. And those that are in spiritual leadership have to watch out for that. There are people that will take on more and more activities, more and more programs to compensate for their lack of spirituality, for their lack of feeling connected to God. And you got to watch out for that because that's going to hurt them in the long run. What are the ministry needs that the more mature Christian has? And what I was just saying really segues into this. The first one is a peer-type relationship with more mature Christians and with leaders. And when you're a newborn Christian, there's definitely the newborn to the more mature Christian relationship, and it's not necessarily a peer relationship. I'm not saying that it's ordered necessarily, like, you know, an employee-boss kind of thing or a parent-child, but there's definitely that aspect to it because the more mature Christian's going to have more knowledge. As a person grows into this more mature Christian, they've got to have peer-type relationships with more mature Christians and with leaders. And without that peer-type relationship, it's an unhealthy relationship. It's not as full as it really needs to be. And look at the relationship Paul cultivated, for instance, with the Philippians. And this was a church that was very mature and that was involved in other mission work with him and things. Look at the things he says to them. Philippians chapter 1, verse 3, I thank my God every time I remember you. In all my prayers for all of you, I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now. Being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. It is right for me to feel this way about all of you, since I have you in my heart. For whether I am in chains or defending and confirming the gospel, all of you share God's grace with me. You see how he's treating them like peers? And then when you read through the rest of the Philippian letter, you see that he is very candid with them and very open. He treats them as peers, is the best way I can describe it. And more mature Christians have to have peer-type relationships with more mature Christians and with leaders. It's a real sign of trouble if you don't have that. The next ministry need that the more mature Christian has is that there has to be a real respect for individual faith and integrity through people's spiritual experiences. Look in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 15. All of us who are mature... All right, where was I? There's got to be a respect for the individual faith and integrity through experiences. You know, every time I record these messages, somebody calls me on the phone. It just never fails. But anyway, look in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 15. All of us who are mature should take such a view of things. And if on some point you think differently, that too God will make clear to you. Only let us live up to what we have already attained. Paul's got a real respect for the Christians in Philippi to realize that they're not necessarily going to agree with every single thing he says or experiences or passes along to them or whatever. And he's okay with that. He realizes that he's dealing with people that are more mature, and he's willing to cut them some slack and not just feel like he's got to control them. You know, when a good example of this is like if you're training a child how to do something, like, say, clean a car. You take your kids out to clean the car with you. You show them exactly how to do it. You put the water in the bucket. You get the sponge. You get the soap. You hose the car down. You show them exactly how to do it and teach them exactly all the steps right along the way to do it. And, you know, if they mess up a little bit, you don't worry about it too much, but you're pretty much showing them all the steps. Well, someone who's a more mature Christian, you don't go out there and say, or a more mature kid, rather, you don't go out there and say, okay, go wash the car, now do this and this and this and this and give them all the steps. You tell your teenager, hey, I'll pay you $5 to go out and wash the car. And they go and get the hose, and they go and get in the bucket, and they go get the sponge. You've already trained them how to clean the car. They know how to do it. Now you're going to go out there when they're finished, and hopefully the car is clean and doesn't have big spots that were missed or, you know, water spots because they left the soap on or something like that and didn't rinse it well. But you see the difference there. When you're dealing with a more mature Christian, you're going to let them start choosing how to do things. They know the objective. And yet everybody has their own little path in life that God's going to take them on. And when you're ministering to more mature Christians, that's got to be taken into account as well. You've got to realize that this is part of their life journey, is to figure out how to do things and how to fit all these things together. And Paul just even tells the folks here, on some point, if you think differently, God will make it clear to you. And Paul doesn't feel a need to make them conform to every single thing that he thought or believed or understood. He just didn't feel that need. Well, there's a third stage. And most of us tend to think, and before I studied this out, honestly, I thought, well, there's kind of the newborn Christian stage and there's the mature Christian stage and that's it. But there really is a third stage. And what I call this is the Christ-like Christian. And this stage is defined in the scriptures as well. And the let me talk about some of the characteristics of it. The first characteristic is really knowing Christ through hardships. Look in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 10. And again, here he's writing to a very mature church that he treats as peers. And Paul opens up his heart a little bit here in Philippians 3 and verse 10. And he lets the Philippians see where he is in his relationship with God. He says, I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of sharing in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, and so somehow to attain the resurrection from the dead. There's this knowing Christ through hardships aspect of the Christ-like Christian. The mature Christian perseveres, they're disciplined, but this subsequent stage is really experiencing suffering as Christ did. And it's a very profound, mature sort of a stage, but through the suffering, through the hardships, coming to know Christ in a more profound sort of a way is one of the characteristics of this Christ-like Christian. Another characteristic is a real disdain for worldliness. Look in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 7. But whatever was to my profit, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ. What is more, I consider everything a loss, compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whose sake I've lost all things. I consider them rubbish, that I might gain Christ and be found in him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which is through faith in Christ, the righteousness that comes from God and is by faith. You see that Paul has such a disdain for things of the world. And he says, you know, for the sake of Christ, I've lost all things. I consider them rubbish, that I may gain Christ. And when you look at the context of this, he's kind of way out there. He's most interested in gaining Christ and being found in him. at a very profound level. This is not, oh, I was involved in the most church programs of anybody else in the congregation or something like that. This is a very profound depth of his spirituality. In Galatians 6 and verse 14, he alludes to it here. Again, may I never boast except in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom the world has been crucified to me and I to the world. And you don't really see Paul even expecting his hearers to conform to what he's experiencing or going through. But he's just being kind of open with them and saying, here's where I am in my spiritual life. And thankfully, he's out there and he's written about it so that the rest of us can benefit from that. Another characteristic of this Christ-like Christian is a true selfless kind of a love for others. The reality is a lot of our love that we have for others is a little bit selfish too. We like the relationships, we like to be involved with other people, and there's an aspect of our own needs being met when we're involved in relationships with other people. But look at what Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Since then we know what it is to fear the Lord, we try to persuade men. What we are is plain to God, and I hope it is also plain to your conscience. We're not trying to commend ourselves to you again, but are giving you an opportunity to take pride in us, so that you can answer those who take pride in what is seen rather than what is in the heart. If we are out of our mind, it is for the sake of God. If we're in our right mind, it is for you. For Christ's love compels us, because we are convinced that one died for all, and therefore all died. And he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again. There's a certain selflessness in the love that Paul begins to have for other people that characterizes this Christ-like Christian. Now, what are some of the pitfalls that the Christ-like Christian has? They can appear detached. Look in Galatians chapter 2 and verse 6. As for those who seem to be important, whatever they were makes no difference to me. God does not judge by external appearance. Those men added nothing to my message. It's funny. He's like, you guys are all concerned about who these people are? I don't care. And he really didn't care. He wasn't saying that as a put down. He was saying, I really don't care what position they were in. It's kind of incredible. So there's this appearance of being detached from the things that really matter to even more spiritual people. And that leads into the next, more or less, sort of a pitfall, kind of the thing the more Christ-like Christian can have, is they don't really care about pleasing people too much. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 15. The spiritual man makes judgments about all things, but he himself is not subject to any man's judgment. For who has known the mind of the Lord that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. In 1 Corinthians 3, or chapter 4, verse 3, I care very little if I am judged by you or by any human court. Indeed, I do not even judge myself. My conscience is clear, but that doesn't make me innocent. It's the Lord who judges me. And the more this Christ-like Christian can almost annoy the mature Christian or the newborn Christian, because the things that seem to matter a lot to those two stages just don't matter at all to the Christ-like Christian. They really don't care what people think. They don't care if they're judged by a human court of any kind. They just know that the Lord judges them, and they live in good faith in their relationship with him. And they're not going to go off and play all these people-pleasing kind of games that the newborn Christian or the more mature Christian might even get involved in. Well, what does a Christ-like Christian need in terms of their ministry needs? They need fellowship. In 2 Corinthians 2, verse 12, now when I went to Troas to preach the gospel of Christ and found that the Lord had opened a door for me, I still had no peace of mind because I didn't find my brother Titus there. So I said goodbye to them and went on to Macedonia. So he needs fellowship. He's missing Titus. He needs fellowship. He also needs an opportunity to minister. In Galatians chapter 2 and verse 9, James, Peter, and John, those reputed to be pillars, gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship when they recognized the grace given to me. They agreed that, we should go to the Gentiles and they to the Jews. All they asked was that we should continue to remember the poor, the very thing I was eager to do. So, again, the Christ-like Christian, he's just looking for a place to minister. Give me some relationships, give me a place to minister, and I'm going to be happy as a clam. Well, what are the significance of these stages? You know, as we go through them, we change. Our view of things changes. Our needs change. Our role in the church may change. Our relationship and roles and relations to other people may change. The kind of questions that we ask are going to change. The level of precision of the answers that we need are going to change. The acceptability of previous answers is going to change. We're going to start refining our understanding of things. And you got to recognize that these changes are things that you're going to go through and that other people are going to go through. And for your own peace of mind, for your own spiritual growth, you got to be sensitive to the fact that, okay, at these different stages, here's the things I need. And be sensitive to that. You know, the goal of parenting is to raise a mature adult. And you give different parenting along the way. You tell the little child, well, don't touch the electrical outlet. You tell them why, as much as they can handle it. But sooner or later, they're going to learn. You teach them how to make decisions, how to discuss alternatives and consider those things. You wrestle with the freedom versus control. You want your kids to be safe, but you've also got to give them the freedom to make mistakes. And you hopefully give them freedom to make a mistake that's not so serious that it's going to be really detrimental or harmful. Another thing that you do in parenting is you want to discover each child's uniqueness and help them to accept who they are and to succeed at that. And at the same time, to be able to say, okay, if this is how you were made, if this is how God made you, here's how you can excel at how God made you. And the same things are true in the spiritual realm. When you have young Christians, you may have a lot of rules or guidelines or whatever. As you get them older, they've got to have freedom. They've got to discover who they are uniquely and really be faithful to that. It's about God. It's not about just pleasing more mature Christians or Christian leaders. You've got to help people to understand that they're ultimately living to please God. In the earlier stages of Christian life, God can be in a little box. God wants you to do this and that and the other thing. Later on, God's not in a box anymore. And, you know, when kids go through that the transitions of different stages, there's conflict. And anybody who's been a parent of a child knows this, that you go through conflict. Well, hopefully in the church you won't necessarily have the conflict, but there's certainly discomfort when Christians go from young Christian stage to, hey, I'm a more mature Christian now. I'm not going to go do that because I'm going to do this instead. Or the Christ-like Christian, hey, you guys can go off and play that game all you want. I'm not doing that. And it can be very annoying to those who are trying to get everybody to conform, like everybody's, you know, a spiritual 3-year-old type of thing. You know, the ultimate goal is to raise them as an adult. If you're raising kids, you want to raise them to be adults. You want them to be your peer. Mark Twain has a famous quote. When I was 14, my father was a complete fool. When I was 21, he was an intelligent man. I was surprised at how much he had learned in 7 years. And, you know, when you see Jesus talking to the apostles before the crucifixion, look at what he says to them. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything I learned from the Father, I have made known to you. He's calling them friend. He's calling them peers. Christianity is about bringing people up to ultimately be your peer and to have a sustained, mature, Christ-like relationship with God. In Acts chapter 20, verse 32, now I commit you to God and to the word of his grace, which can build you up and give you an inheritance among all who are sanctified. Let's talk about churches as we wrap this up here. Even if churches didn't change, they would appear to change to you. The reality is that some churches focus on certain stages. And when you're in that stage the church focuses on, everything is fine. But as you grow, you may not fit very well. Let me give you an example. It's pretty common. A lot of churches today are focusing on growth. And by design, everything is built around the newborn Christian stage. Well, the newborn Christian comes into that environment, and it just fits perfectly. Everything is ideal. And it's by design. It's perfect. But the longer time goes on, the less the person fits in. Right? Because they're maturing. And yet the church is built around the newborn Christian. Imagine buying clothes for a 10-year-old that are maybe a little bit big for him. Well, he's going to grow into it, then it'll fit, and then he's going to grow out of it. And that's how a lot of churches are. If they focus on these individual stages, it's going to cause problems. I mean, it fits great for the thing they're trying to do, but they've got to find a way to meet needs outside of that stage they focus on. And I think when you look at the early church, you don't see them saying, oh, well, you're an older Christian, you don't fit here anymore. That you just don't see that sort of structure. So today's churches have some growing to do in that regard. It's a real shame when you have churches today that people get involved in, and yet at a certain point in time, they just don't fit anymore. But again, I'm hopefully explaining why this is happening so you can understand your bad church experience and say, oh, I get it now. I get it now. Okay. And that's really the message about the spiritual life cycle, is that as an individual believer, you're going to grow through various stages. Your needs are going to change as you go through them. But if a church is focused on a certain stage, it's not going to fit. And you're going to have the same kind of conflicts that the teenager has when the mom or dad's treating them like they're 8 years old when they're 15. You know, it's the exact same issue. A lot of church leaders are focused more on wanting conformity and dependence than in creating mature Christians. And, you know, does God really want Christians to forever be dependent upon church programs or spiritual leaders in the same way as they were when they were new to the faith? Well, no. You know, and so there's got to be this way that people are allowed to grow. Now, I want to give you caution here. Just because a church doesn't work for you in the stage that you're in doesn't mean it doesn't work for other people who are in that stage. Okay? So you can't just say, oh, this is a terrible thing now. Like, I've known people and seen situations where, oh, this church is great, and then, you know, a few years later, oh, this church stinks, this is bad, this is terrible. Well, wait a minute. It's kind of the same church as it was 3 years ago. What changed? Well, what changed was that person's needs, okay? And you got to realize that the churches that do this sort of thing, it really works for a lot of people. The problem is that when you grow out of it, now you don't fit anymore, and something's got to happen with that. And the rest of our series here, hopefully we'll be able to talk about that some more and to help. But again, hopefully this lesson is illuminating to the whole idea of stages. And again, I think that if you study out the New Testament, you'll see evidence of these different stages. And there's different issues at the different stages. And if you understand these things, you'll have a better way of understanding your own spiritual experiences and making some sense out of them. So anyway, thanks for paying attention, and I will talk to you the next time.